We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about T-Squared Social, the new home of Knicks Film School Watch Parties. The next one this Saturday when the Knicks take on the Philadelphia 76ers in Game 1 of their first round matchup. Located just two blocks from Grand Central, this place has everything for a sports fan. Join us this Saturday for Game 1 as the Knicks will battle it out with their division rival from the city of brotherly love. Watch the game with us on the biggest screen in New York City, or get there early and grab a table so you and your friends or your family can dine out while watching the game on one of their several other dozen widescreen TVs. T-Squared Social, your number one place to watch the next big Knicks game. Get a free draft beer when you tell them Knicks Film School sent you. Visit tsquaredsocial.com for more information.
Hero fakes his three-pointer. It's up. It's good. One-point game with 0.3 seconds remaining. Ball knocked loose. And that'll do it. The Heat arguing that there should be time on the clock. The Heat players talking. Tony Brothers says no, the game is over and the Sixers survive. An inspiring victory here in the play-in game. Brothers was adamant right away, waved it off, said game over. And Miami will have to play in another play-in game Friday. The Sixers advance. They'll play the next Saturday in New York.
All right, so we were either going to get a series against a team that we would be playing for the second time in roughly a calendar year, or we were going to get a series against a team that we haven't played in 35 years, and we got the latter, because the Philadelphia 76ers won a very interesting affair that resembled a basketball game at times in Philadelphia by 1 point over the Miami Heat, although it wasn't quite that close as it turns out in the end. We're going to talk about it and then get to any questions or thoughts anybody else out there has. Let me introduce my esteemed panel. I'm going to go with the guy right next to me on the screen first. DJ Zulo. Hello, DJ.
How are we doing? I thought I wasn't going to have any anxiety, any stress watching that game, but I feel like the game, the way it sort of unfolded, brought out some anxiety just by the sheer magnitude of the chaos that game was. So I'm trying to decompress after that, but glad to be back on with you and try to break this one down.
And then my other guests, I was going to introduce him as Benji Ritholtz, but he's taken on a different persona. I think he's already in playoff mode, perhaps. Hi, Benji.
I'm locked in.
Did Tom Thibodeau tell you to say that?
What's up, John and DJ? Playoff time is here. Philadelphia, it is. We're ready. Let's lock in. Let's do it.
All right. So
it's exciting.
It is exciting. It's a lot to go through. DJ, I think you nailed it. That was a really strange experience for me watching that game, because I think, like a lot of people, I entered the game with maybe not a clear rooting interest for Miami, but with the, you know, suspicion that Miami would present the easier, I mean, these both of those teams would have presented challenges for as poorly as they both played today. And then as the game went on and we watched Joel Embiid, well, we watched the Philadelphia 76ers forget how to execute basic basketball actions, like throw entry passes and like move around without the ball and those sorts of things. It's also Joel Embiid not looking anything remotely resembling the guy who was on track to win a second consecutive MVP until late in the game when he didn't look like himself, but you know what? He did enough and he's an MVP. So maybe we shouldn't be surprised. And it's like, as you're watching this, it was like, well, what, you know, are we sure? What do we actually want to happen here? And it was just like, all right, let's just see what the hell happens. And we go with whatever happens. Let's just start with initial impressions from the game. Benji, I'll start with you and go to DJ.
Yeah, I mean, I'll focus on Philly because that's going to be the focus. The two things that jump out right away is how deep Embiid is dropping in pick and roll coverage, and it doesn't really appear like he's interested or able to come out very far with any energy. And whereas Tyler Hero missed about 13 open pull-up threes. And
it's not an exaggeration, by the way. Not an exaggeration.
I mean, he had, but like the shots were all there, right? The shots were there. And if that is the Embiid that comes out defensively against the Knicks and Jalen Brunson is the person taking those shots, you got to feel really good. You got to feel good about the Knicks' ability to score in the series if that is the Joel Embiid defensively that we get. Now, I don't know. There are a couple of days between now and then. Game one, we'll see how he looks. But I wouldn't be particularly encouraged if I was a Philadelphia fan in terms of his ability to get out to the perimeter and guard anybody. And then defensively, it comes down to Joel. If he's not able to cook one-on-one because he's lacking the burst and athleticism, and you don't have to help a ton, and you can rely on Hartenstein and Mitch to at least hold their ground to some extent, one-on-one or with very little support, you're in really good shape. And I thought that he got themselves in a lot of trouble when they overhelped on Embiid high post-ups and even farther out of the three-point line, right? So on both ends, if that's the Embiid that you get, I really like where we are with the opportunities on both ends of the floor to exploit that. We'll see if that's the Embiid we get, but that's kind of my initial impression.
Yeah, I think that's the unknown right now. And it's just strange because, like, look, I said during the live stream, and I'll say it, we watched this game. Like, I haven't watched all of Philly, certainly. I've watched them here and there it was actually only five games Embiid was back before tonight. And he shot under, 50% from 2-point range. Now he's had some bad opponents mixed in there, for sure. But like, was there a regression tonight? Like we missed the last game of the season. Like we just don't know. There's so much that we don't know, especially about, is this going to get better? Is this going to get worse? Like, we just don't know. DJ, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, it was the Orlando game, which was the final game that he played in the regular season, that he re-injured something, left the game, came back, and that's then was right. Held out of the last game that they played. So clearly something happened there. Now they're calling the him not playing the last game for it was a precaution, but you never know. And I think you mentioned regression. It felt like, based on the Orlando game and how he looked tonight, it felt like there was a regression in terms of his health, his ability to move. I didn't think he was as stationary in the Orlando game as he was today or tonight on the defensive end. So I don't think this is going to get measurably better for him, because I feel like this is a significant injury that continues. So he grabbed it a few times, even tonight. I came into this game worried about an Embiid that was on a trajectory to get healthier. And I am less concerned about that based on the fact that tonight he clearly was not healthier. If anything, he was, he looked more compromised. So by that alone, I'm a little more confident in this potential matchup. A lot of it because of what Benji pointed out. I think defensively, I don't know how he can defend how the Knicks are going to operate with Jalen Brunson walking into three-pointers and Embiid staying around the free throw line. I just don't know how that is going to happen. We saw Nick Nurse on the broadcast mention that Embiid's got to get out and guard someone. So he wants that to be adjusted, but we just don't know how able Embiid is right now. And then just the last thing to turn it before I turn it back to you, I think the Maxi piece of it is maybe even more of a concern on the Knicks perspective, because you saw in the second half, his burst, his ability to get into the paint really helped change the game for the Sixers on offense, who ended up scoring 66 in the second half. Now that has been a Knick problem, keeping smaller, quick guards out of the paint since they, since Quentin Grimes left this team. So that is something just as a Knick fan or a Knick observer and Knick analyst, that's something that concerns me a little bit, because I thought in the second half, he did a better job of getting into the paint.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Maxey. We're talking about, like, obviously what or people who watch the game noticed what Embiid was able to do late. We mentioned during we were watching along, Embiid's passing was the one thing that was still there. Now, obviously, Miami may have helped him out a few times by the extra coverage that they mm-hmm. sent his way. It does feel worth noting that Nick Batum scored more points tonight than he has scored in a game in over a year. The last time Nick Batum scored 20 points in a basketball game was March 27th of 2023. And then the time before that he did it was in December of 2022. So, like, if Batum doesn't go 6-10 from three, like, the Sixers just aren't winning this game, which is like, okay, well, yes, they scored all those points in the second half, but look at what they needed to have happen to do it. Benji, let me go back to you, because I want to pick up on something we talked about in last year. I know we're already getting into the nitty gritty of this, even though we're going to have, I guess, some more time, but I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to talk to you guys again. You mentioned Deuce, I think. You brought him up on the watch along, and how big of a series this might be for Deuce. And actually, DJ, I'll bring you in too, because I was like, well, I assume he'll get 20 minutes a night. And DJ, you were like skeptical of that. So I'll just throw it to Benji, you first, and then DJ. Like, how important a piece do you think McBride is in this series just to neutralize the Maxey factor?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they'll be able to get him up to 20. That seems like a lot. Yeah. But I would say, in terms of, like, he's for sure their best option on Maxey navigating screens up there, even probably over OG, who can do it and did it okay in the January game, but also got beat his share of times. And I think there's a lot of value to OG being off the ball on someone like a Harris or a Oubre, who you can maybe help off of and cheat off of and roam and double Embiid or dig on Embiid and all that. And I don't think DiVincenzo is really up to that task. He could do okay in passable, but I think Maxey's going to get his share of paint touches on DiVincenzo. So as a defensive matchup, I think Deuce is the best option. And then look, like, Nick Nurse is a creative defensive coach. We've seen that. And he's done, even without Embiid, they've guarded Brunson. They've made Brunson work really hard. And the more places you can help off of, the better off you are. And, like, Josh Hart, we'll see. Like, Miami exposed him last year. To what extent can Philly expose him, and can you pivot to a Deuce sub if you need it for the offensive spacing too? Because, like, the guy's a proven shooter at this point. Can't argue with the numbers. He's been a knockdown shooter the whole second half of the year. So
don't forget the Philly game for Deuce, which was where one of the first Deuce explosions. Yeah,
that's right. So, like, I don't know if he gets the 20 a game. I think he's a weapon. I hope he gets a chance to shine in this series. I think it can be a very beneficial series to use the Deuce card, as it was to player twos.
DJ. And again, the reason I'm going to the Deuce point so early is it's like, if we get a compromised Embiid, you know, which it looks like we're going to get, does that become, in terms of how the Knicks are able to guard Maxey and make sure Maxey isn't the one that beats you, does that become like the pivot point on that side of the floor? So that's the only reason I go to it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it felt that way in the second half, at least, that they needed someone to create an advantage. And in the first half, it just, with Embiid, you know, they really weren't going to the two-man game, Maxey and Embiid, in the first half, and they did a little bit in the second half. And I felt like it sort of, I don't think they got great offense out of it in terms of the points per possession, but I felt like it just, they had a semblance of offense that had more rhythm. And I felt like Maxey was central to that. Yeah. He is an absolute dynamite driver of the ball. And I too, because it's clear as day believe that McBride is your best option. My concern is, like, if Hart's at 37, if DiVincenzo's at 37 and Brunson's at 38 in the terms of the minutes per game, like, you could go small, you could figure out a way to maybe get Deuce up to 15 minutes, but I feel like that might cap where he is. And then if you're going to be between, let's say he averages 15 minutes, like, what is your impact going to be in a series where everyone, you know, that's their right. best players are playing 38 minutes a game? Because I'm also aware of the fact that McBride might be his series. This could be in terms of the spacing and, like, what he brings on that end as a connector, as a ball mover, as a elite defensive player against a smaller guard. So I'm just more concerned about, like, where the minutes are going to come from, because I feel like he deserves and has a skill set to really shine in this series.
What's up, Knicks fans? You know, the other day I was talking to two girls who were telling me how into foreplay they are and how they wish they had more single guys to do it with. No, not that foreplay. We're not looking to get teed up on the pod. I'm talking FOURPLAY foreplay. It's an app where single friends team up and double date other single friends. It's a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people, which is exactly why single girls love it. In fact, they love it so much that they make up the majority of teams on the app, as in a 3-to-1 ratio in your favor. Back when I was single, I would have definitely loved this. Look, we all know everything is better with a friend. Just ask Josh and Jalen, even if Brunson won't admit it. And with foreplay, you don't have to sacrifice bromance for romance, because it's a chance to enjoy a night out with a buddy while meeting two new people in a more social environment without any expectation. And the icing on the cake, it's totally free. All right, it's game time. So head over to the App Store now and download foreplay, FOURPLAY, and get ready for a little 2-on-2 pickup.
John, you're really good with, like, minutes. Why, you know, can you get him to 20 minutes if you're, well, if Hart's at 36 and DiVincenzo's at 38?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think 38 or more for OG, well, I mean, we assume OG's going to be able to go that much, or maybe I shouldn't assume that, but let's assume OG could go 38. Him, Hart, I think, is a given at this point. Like, and
30, Brunson, 38 might be low for
38's low. No, 38's low. And Brunson, 38. I mean, depending on the game, 38 might be way low for Brunson. But that's 30 right there.
I don't know.
What do you think?
I don't know if physically you can push, like, and maybe he was doing it in the regular season to preserve him for this. But, like, Brunson was the one guy when Hart was playing 40 and DiVincenzo was playing 42, and, like, Brunson stuck around 36, right? Yeah. And, like, maybe that was just so he could push him now.
Well, but he pushed him in the playoffs last year to 40. Yeah,
so in the playoffs last year,
the way he's playing now without Randall.
Yeah. That's true. No, you're absolutely,
like,
right.
I don't know if that's physically possible to play the way Jalen Brunson's playing and play 43 minutes.
But that the series against Miami, it felt like, in terms of the load and the attention he was drawing, I felt like was exceeded what he's been doing this year because of Randall was there.
Yeah, but you're still running possessions to Randall, and stylistically, he wasn't running around the ring around the rosy every possession just to get the ball. Like, I'm sure he'll play 40.
We'll keep the math easy. Keep it at 38. So that's 30 minutes. Maybe Dante is the one who takes a little bit of a haircut, although I don't know if that's necessarily fair. So let's say 42 to 44 minutes you have to play with. So then you're coming down to a couple questions. One is Precious Achiuwa getting any time at the four, which I want to hear you guys' answer to that. And then number two, Bogdanović, again, there was a report from our own Chris Procyainen earlier today that he had his wrist scoped. Is Bogdanović a player that they could feel that, or they feel they can survive with defensively on the floor? And I against this particular team, I don't know the answer to that question. I will just say I've been tracking Tibbs' lineups for basically since OG came back, and I would wager that, with the exception of maybe a handful of minutes, if that, because this is what it's been trending towards, he's going to have three starters on the floor at all times in the playoffs, because that's what he's been doing. Pick up anywhere you want to on that, Benji.
doesn't feel like a precious series to me. Maybe spot minutes with some foul trouble. Maybe little spurts here and there, but I would actually think about, you know, maybe it's at backup center if like Mitch hasn't been effective or something, and you want to be more switchable with, because Maxi will stagger and play with that second unit. So you want to be a little more switchable, although Precious got burned a few times in the January game on switches, but with Maxi, but like theoretically can be more switchable. So as a four, like I'm not sure why, like, I don't, unless you feel like you're nervous about Tobias Harris hurting your smaller guys, which I don't think the Knicks are or should be. I don't know if it's a Precious at the four kind of series. I would frankly advise against it, but we'll see, you know, series changes and you never know.
If that's the case, then that's 40-ish at least minutes between McBride and Bogey.
Yeah. And the Bogey part is interesting because I think offensively, he could be huge in the series.
Most electric stretches of the season against Philly at the All-Star break.
That's right. So like, I think they concede some threes. I think, you know, especially if they're in a heavy drop, I think you'll see, you know, weak side peeling over. And I think, I don't know, I could see Bogdanović having a big impact then defensively, which is obviously where the concern is. I'm not sure, like they do it a little bit, but like Maxi kind of hunting those switches, I don't think it's a massive part of their offense. They'll try to get Brunson into actions for sure. But like, I don't know. It's not like a Jimmy Butler, the way he'll just like call you out when he's healthy anyway, call you out and find the mismatch and go at you. So maybe you can find a role for Bogey in this series, in which case you'll split. And I hope you can, because the shooting obviously is important and the size and whatever. So I could see Bogey having a big impact in this series. Yeah.
Deed. Yeah, I agree. Then I also agree that there's plenty of options here to not hide him on defense, but feel comfortable of the assignment. And then on the Achiuwa piece, I'm in complete alignment regarding not having him play your 4 minutes, but will say that whether it was with Toronto, and I feel like a few possessions in the January game, he has guarded Embiid well. And he guards him well because he is very disciplined at keeping his hands up and away, and he shows them, and he's very clear about it. And he did it with DeRozan in the last game of the season, where it's the other guy that you cannot reach in because he's going to draw that foul. As soon as he picks it up, he gets so many reach-ins. And if you can just make those players shoot over you and don't bail them out, you are doing half your work. And Achiuwa, there's limitations regarding his size and length, but in the Embiid matchup, and there's going to be a game where they're going to need him to play minutes based on foul trouble that is just going to happen in a long series.
Yep.
I feel okay about him in that role, but that does.
But that's talking playing, more in the five.
Right, at the five. So by breaking this down, I'm glad we did the exercise. There probably is more minutes for McBride than I had anticipated based on the fact that you probably are going to want to limit those 4 minutes, and then you can probably get 18 to 20 for McBride. And I feel like that's a good step for the balance of this team.
When the Knicks have the ball, so again, Embiid found a way to make an impact on the game to his credit. He's got a great player on offense. Defensively, I didn't see anything there. And I think you guys already spoke on that. Mm-hmm. How important is Isaiah Hartenstein in this series on offense to Brunson helping Brunson get going?
Well, it's Embiid was in that January game, and that was the game where Hartenstein he arguably, in terms of scoring the ball for himself, maybe his one of his best games of the year.
Yeah.
And it was Embiid in as deep a drop as he was tonight. And it was Hartenstein eating that space up and finishing, whether it was with the floater or going all the way to the basket. Like, that to me is an element that you watch this game tonight. And when did you see Bam take advantage of how Embiid was playing? And I know there was some cross matching and Embiid was not guarding him the entire time, but I feel like Hartenstein, look, it's not going to be the base of your offense, but I feel like he provides an element to counter how Embiid is going to play. And that's not even considering the fact that you know, if he's going to be in a drop, Benji talked about what that provides Jalen Brunson, you know, coming down off a screen. And if you're not if you're Oubre and you lose connection by a millisecond, that you're walking into a pull-up three. And that to me has not been, that is not a recipe for success against the Knicks. Even if he's not making that shot, Brunson is a different level of scorer in that intermediate mid-range area. So if he gets downhill, you get him beat backpedaling, and then he's quick-shotting him. He's getting the ball up. There's just so many more avenues that he can get to for efficient offense compared to what Hero was doing, where he had the same looks from three, was missing him. But when he got downhill, it was that, you know, it was a inefficient mid-range pull-up that the Sixers are just going to allow him to take time and time again. So yeah, Hartenstein's a big piece of this, not just as a, because the short roll game, like if he's going to be in a deep drop, that source of offense might not be there with the same regularity as we've seen over the second half of the season. But as a finisher, as a scorer, that's the way that Hartenstein can take advantage of how Embiid is playing them.
What do you think, Bench?
Yeah, I mean, I will say in the second half of that January game, Embiid started showing higher. And they did get a couple of short roll looks for Hartenstein to operate, and he did well. So we'll see. I don't know if Embiid's capable of showing out high right now. So we'll see what happens there. The other way I think Hartenstein becomes essential, and look, this is how the Knicks now operate their offense, is when that first action on the strong side is shut down and you can now toss the ball weak side to Hartenstein and run DiVincenzo off of DHO.
Right? Which, by the way, I saw someone on Twitter who watched all of DiVincenzo's threes this year, clipped the whole bunch of them.
So Embiid now has to guard the initial action and he has to guard the secondary action because Hartenstein's become kind of the outlet on the weak side. And how can he get side to side? The way the Knicks offense has now evolved is it's free flowing side to side. It didn't used to be. This year it really has become free flowing side to side basketball. That's asking Embiid to be really mobile. And especially against a shooter of DiVincenzo's caliber, like, can he get out there on DiVincenzo on the DHO situation again? Hartenstein's a great screener. So like he'll free him up. Like that's where I think it's not only in the primary action, it's now asking Embiid to have to navigate all the secondary actions. Now does Philly pivot to him guarding Josh Hart?
Well, I was just going to ask you that. That to me is the move.
That's something the Celtics have done with Porzingis.
Hold on, let's play this out. And then Harris goes on Hartenstein or whoever the center is.
And you dare the Knicks to throw the ball into the post with Hartenstein, which they just don't like to do and don't do a lot of. If you put someone smaller on him. So that's definitely a possibility. Nick Nurse, again, a very creative and daring defensive coach. I would not be surprised. You will see some zone. You saw it against Miami tonight. You'll see a little bit of zone, especially if Embiid's not particularly mobile. So you're going to have to navigate all that. It's not going to be one look and it's not going to be one thing.
But Hart, see, this is why everything always comes back to Hart for me. And you guys, I think Benji already brought him up earlier. Like, there is a way for him to punish that, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, in the same way that Hartenstein might, he can serve the same purpose as Hartenstein, maybe not quite as adept at like being a DHO hub, but capable of it. And like he's able to, he's a chameleon offensively. He can kind of do whatever you need him to do. Plus, look, this is when things get a little hairy. Is like he'll probably be open for threes if Embiid's guarding him, and if they do make that move, it'll be important for Josh Hart to shoot them with confidence. And if he doesn't shoot them immediately, then it's straight into a dribble handoff. It's
stampede
straight into a
catch or
stampede the catch. It cannot be a stand and hold and hesitate and wait, because that's when you empower the defense to play that coverage, is when you stall the offense by waiting. We've seen him get a lot better of that at that last 15 games or so. It's always a quick decision whether it's the three or not. So you keep the wheels moving of the offense, but that's the way he punishes that coverage.
The only concern is, and this is less of a concern with Hartenstein in the game, but if you're going to now bring, let's say you want Embiid in the action, so you bring Hart up. Now he's setting the screen because Embiid is guarding Hart. Your spacing is going to be compromised. Where if you have Hartenstein, whether he's at the dunkers or he's somewhere else, there's more bodies now that you have to navigate if you're trying to create free flowing offense. Now that to me, because Hartenstein does a really good job of just maintaining movement, it's less of a concern. With Robinson in the game, I feel like that's when you can really start to see things get muddy. If you do put Embiid on Hart or someone else, you want to bring them into the action, and then you have Robinson standing in the dunker spot, then things are just going to be a little more cramped. If you're Brunson, you're trying to get to not all the way to the rim, but you're trying to get downhill to the paint and get efficient offense. It becomes a little tougher if your center is not setting the screen. He's now at the dunker spot. It complicates things a little bit. It's the right counter. It's what you have to do if that's the change the Sixers make, but there's going to be trade-offs there if you're the Knicks.
This is true, but two things on that. Number one, if you do draw Embiid out and you have him on Josh Hart, not that he'll be like out to the three-point line on Josh Hart, but at least he's a perimeter-oriented player, so Embiid's not going to be like parked in the paint.
Right.
Your offensive rebounding may become a big factor. Like who else does Philly have to really keep you off the boards?
It's about Kyle Lowry.
That's who it is.
By the way, he's probably your best job. And the second thing, that's one, is like you got to punish that. If they do make that pivot, one of the ways to punish it is on the offensive boards through Hartenstein and Mitch. Second thing is, okay, so does it have to be Tobias Harris? Who else are you going to put on Hartenstein? And if it's Tobias Harris, I'm not only screening with Josh Hart. Bring in Tobias Harris to a Jalen Brunson action, and good luck. Sure.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, so who else are you going to put on Hartenstein? Like,
then you switch that if you're the Sixers. Wings.
Good.
Tobias
Harris cannot stay with Jalen Brunson.
I'm just saying it's the worst aspect of Jalen Brunson's game is when he is. And listen, it's just what has been a problem the entire year, him isolating against bigger, even if they're not great defenders, it is just not an ideal source of offense because it's going to be a lower percentage mid-range shot because he's not getting all the way to the basket. And you're just going to, you space him a little bit and you force a tough contest. I don't know, man. It's the one aspect of his game where I'm just like, he'll hunt a mismatch to me. It's the only time it's detrimental to the team. The only time.
I totally hear you. And actually, I agree with your point. I don't know. There might be a level at which the defender is just not good enough. Like Tobias Harris might be that level. Like where he literally cannot, like he will not be able to keep Jalen Brunson out of it. Not that Jalen Brunson will have to settle for outside shots. Like he might just be in the paint at will. So but in the end, what you're seeing through this conversation, though, is the Knicks will have options. They will have ways to score in this series.
More than Miami did today.
And I think more than we would have against Miami in terms of weak spots, in terms of places to attack. Shots you know will be there. Like, you know you will have certain shots throughout the series, and it'll be about make or miss.
Miami scored 100 points in this game. I understand they got what was their final points off turnovers amount? It's probably in the high teens, if not 20, whatever. But I mentioned it since on the watch along, since the OG trade, Knicks have been seventh in the league in forcing our opponent turnovers, opponent turnover percentage.
And, Miami at 22, by the way.
22
points off turnovers.
22 points. That's a lot. So, I mean, that's a lot to ask, but they were also awful at taking advantage of a lot of those turnovers.
Yes, they were.
Because they didn't know what the hell they were doing against Philly's transition defense, which was pretty good. But the Knicks, I think, are, with Josh Hart and OG Anunoby, are a pretty good transition offense team. So can they, you know,
DiVincenzo shooting in transition.
And another fire. That's why I love that thread that you did. That was great.
Thank you.
So, yes, I completely agree. Knicks will have ways to score. Like, we've been going for a half hour, so I want to get you guys out of here. It's getting late. DJ, we'll end with picks, even though I think I have a feeling I know which way both of you guys are going to pick. DJ, what's one thing we haven't talked about that you're going to be wondering about or that you want to bring up or anything that you want to touch on before we go?
What's one thing? I am curious to see DiVincenzo. I know we had the Benji thread, and there's a full expectation that what he was in the regular season carries over. I believe that to be the case. I think he's a tough minded player. I feel like he's I'm the built for this is such a cliche, but I feel like he's a player I wouldn't worry about in a big moment. But I'm just curious, is he going to be as free flowing? Are the shots going to be as fluid and easy? And is the conscience going to be as like, I'm just shooting these because this is what I do? So I'm just curious to see, like, you know, how is he going to perform, and like the juxtaposition between that and like Quentin Grimes last year. Like, how big a deal will it be to just have a guy that is just not going to hesitate, that is just going, he'll get up 10 threes in a playoff game if that's what it's called for. Like, that'll be a big deal just to see him perform in a postseason. I know he's had some experience, but not a ton. And then, you know, how's Mitch going to look? That's just a big piece of, yep. It's been spotty in terms of his health. The performance sometimes has been really good. Sometimes you can really see him laboring, and there's been some like injury things that have potentially popped up here. So just, we need him to give 15 ish minutes a night and just be at peak form and dominate the glass and provide enough resistance in the Embiid matchups to make life tough on him. And I think the bench is thin. They need him to have a good solid series.
Edge.
We touched on it a little bit. The most interesting thing to me schematically is where how do you deploy OG Anunoby defensively? Where is he on the floor? Where is he most impactful? And it's probably going to be a little bit of everything, if I had a guess. And I think, you know, in January he guarded Maxey primarily. I think if there's a type of player that he isn't like a dominant defensive force against, it's a Maxey type. It's just hard to guard 6 foot jitterbugs if you're 6'8", and you know, it's hard. It's hard to navigate all those screens. It's hard to keep up. He was okay, did some good things, but got beat his share of times. Like, I think you will see some of that. The other advantage to that is you can do some switching with Embiid and Maxey actions. I'm actually less concerned with how that goes with Embiid on OG than I am with how it goes on like Hartenstein on Maxey. But I think you'll see I think you'll see the Knicks do a little bit of it, especially late clock. I think you'll see them do it to try to prevent easy looks late clock. So, and it take, you try to eliminate that easy pocket pass Maxey to Embiid mid-range jumper. That's their bread and butter, right? So if you can limit that, switching is one way to do that. But that's the advantage of having him on Maxey. You take him off Maxey, you put him on a Oubre, a Batum, a Harris. Maybe not Batum after the way he shot. Harris and Oubre. Who I think that neither has shot the ball great this year. And now you have him helping in the paint on that pick and roll, and you can maybe blitz Maxey and have him on the back line stepping up on Embiid's roll. That's also super impactful. And the rim protection he provides as the weak side, we've seen it over and over again. So he's a defensive weapon. You can utilize him in so many ways. I think you'll see them utilize him in all of the ways I just discussed, but that's the schematically, like that's point number one. It's like, where is OG Anunoby on the floor defensively? How are you weaponizing him?
This is fantastic stuff.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System. And if you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the Big Apple or at hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Don't hesitate. Go to unifiedhealing.com/KFS to learn more and find a center near you. Again, that's unifiedhealing.com/KFS. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Should we do games or just pick the team that's going to win the series? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I can do both. I would love to give this a little more thought if I'm going to be honest, but I will say I feel like the Knicks are the better team, but not by a lot. And I feel like this is a 6 or 7 game series. I'll say Knicks in 6 based on Embiid just being just a little bit more compromised than I thought coming into this one. So Knicks in 6, but it'll be a stressful 6 games.
Just take it one day at a time, one game at a time. I'm just focused on tomorrow.
You're making a pick, you motherfucker.
Give us Knicks a pick for 6. Saturday.
Knicks in 6. Let's go.
Knicks in six. All right, I'll be different. I'll go Knicks in seven. But the Knicks are unequivocally better than the team that we saw tonight. The Sixers team that won the game tonight. If the conversation was would the Knicks, this version of the Knicks, be better than the absolutely peak healthy version of the Philadelphia 76ers? We didn't even mention De'Anthony Melton's name tonight because he didn't play tonight. But is he going to play in the series? Probably not. That's a different conversation. I don't think that matters because I don't think that version of the Sixers is going to appear in the next 2 weeks. So, but I do think they're. Maybe seven's pushing a little bit. Maybe you guys have it with Knicks and six. Shit, could be Knicks and five. Who the hell knows? I think the Knicks are going to win the series. I think they'll figure out a way to win the series.
All right, real quick. If the Knicks don't win the series, is it because Embiid dominates? Like, what are the factors here that would lead you to that conclusion? Like, what would have to happen? Is it just Embiid having a 35 points per game series on like elite efficiency and dominating? Is there something else? Is it Maxey averaging 28? Like, what are the things, or just Brunson not having a Brunson series because the Knicks don't have the second guy?
That's the most obvious answer, right? Brunson just has an off series, right? I mean, and I think I got to tell you, I think we all think he's going to come through. The guy won the national championship for his team in college, which I know it's college, not the pros, but like, not that even Chance has been in big games before. You know, what this is like, but I keep going back to watching Benji's thread about all of his threes that he made. The necessity of him fire, like, there. When's the last time he paused on a 3-point attempt? When's the last time it didn't matter if he was one for?
Oh, the Dallas game where Knicks didn't have anyone. He wasn't shooting great. He never let up. Never.
Yeah, and like again, this is not a knock on DiVincenzo, who I fully believe in. There have been better 3-point shooters than him, better players than him that have seen that they're okay. Now we're 1 for 5. Oh, now I'm 1 for 6. Shit. Now I'm 1 for 7. And all of a sudden it gets tougher to keep hoisting away. That would be something that I wonder, but again, he is so mentally tough. Maybe if that happened in a game, is it happening in 2 games or 3 games or 4 games? I don't see it. So I don't know. Maybe Embiid just gets better. I don't know. Yeah, it's tough for me to answer that question.
I think Embiid will have to be great for them to win. Now he's very capable of being great. I think he'll have to be great. So if this is truly the Embiid that you're going to see the whole series, the Knicks should win the series. They should win.
Absolutely.
So I think them losing would certainly include Embiid looking more like himself and dominating certain stretches of games, if not entire games. And I, just like last season, I think to me the bigger worry is the offensive side of the ball. And are you, sure. you're so crazy heavily reliant on one creator, and not to mention we didn't talk about the non-Brunson minutes tonight.
No, we didn't.
Terrifying. However many minutes it is terrifying. So those are the reasons. You know, if they can't generate enough good looks, other than, you know, they're so reliant on Brunson mid-range jumpers. That's where I think, and then Embiid finds some game and Maxey can take advantage of some matchups. That's where the series, I think, can turn the wrong way. If that's the question. All
right. That was a good question, Deej.
It's Knicks to lose. Knicks to lose.
I second that.
Yeah.
Hi, fellas.
Hey.
Hey, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
I'm trying to get a full part one out of this episode, so I'm going to keep you guys just a little bit longer, if that's okay. Would you like to know some odds for this year?
Why not us?
Already available.
Not us?
So, Benji, I love the spirit and I love you. It's why not now? That's the thing that we've been marketing for the past like week.
Why not this film critic?
Why not?
Why not this host? Why not that's this great. Producer?
That's fantastic.
Keep going. would you guys like, so Knicks in six, Knicks in seven was the pick across the board, right?
Yeah.
So unsponsored, but I just pulled up FanDuel. Knicks in seven right now is +450. Knicks in six is +650. So it's actually really good odds if you're confident in Knicks in six. Now the inverse, Sixers in seven is +650. Sixers in Yeah, Sixers in six is plus 360. This is a pick'em at the moment, fellas. It's gone anywhere from both at minus 108 to the Sixers a little bit favored at minus 112, the Knicks at minus 104, but it's fluctuating back and forth in real time.
Mike, I mean, look, I'll say it. I don't think that that's like wildly disrespectful to the Knicks, because we are sitting here having just watched Joel Embiid play a game in which he looked nothing like Joel Embiid. We are assuming that that will have some modicum of carryover to 3 days from now, 5 days from now, 8 days from now. But like the longer it keeps going, you know, I think a big part of it.
I feel like it's completely fair that it's close to a pick'em. Personally, I think that there's still some skepticism regarding the Knicks that's based on, you know, there's injuries, there's no Randall, there's the scratching and clawing to get the 50 wins. There's just a thought that this Sixer team with Embiid and Maxey, when those two guys have played like a really good team, a team that deserves a lot of respect. So I feel like they're not baking in enough the Embiid health factor, but I feel like the way he performed today, I feel like it's the Knicks should get the edge and should be favored. But it's certainly possible that he can round himself into better health as the series moves along with some days off. But I think if you watched Embiid play, I think it would be a little disingenuous to not say the Knicks should have, with home court, a bit of an edge.
Sure. Benj, last word from you.
I'm totally not the guy who took both the Knicks to beat the Hawks and the Cavs to beat the Knicks. So you should take all my predictions extremely, extremely seriously.
All righty. Who'd you pick in the Heat series?
Probably the Knicks. I'm pretty sure the Knicks.
Okay. Yeah, just do me a favor before you leave and pick the Sixers.
I have trouble with the picks. I have trouble with the picks because it's hard with the Knicks. I'm better at picking non-Knicks series. That's right.
It's hard with the Knicks. And if that doesn't like a perfect crystallization of like fandom of this franchise.
Yeah. It's just why not hard. Now?
Why not now?
There you go. Got it right.
Why not now?
Speaking of why not now, you can get your Why Not Now merch at the Knicks Film School store, 2024 playoff merch. Use code Brunson, that's the name his name is spelled, the way his name is spelled, for 11% off all orders over $50 or more.
Andrew, I want you to know, I had like a big presentation this afternoon at work that I was like very nervous about. And your video came out, and I was literally, I'm walking the position, I'm like, why not me? Why not now?
That's why I made it. Not at all for anybody else, but for you and your presentation.
This morning, man, and I appreciate you for that. That video was fire.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. And thank you, everybody, for the kind words. And thank you for the Knicks for giving me the material to do it. Why not now? Why not this year? Why not us?
I love it.
Damn right.
I love it, too. Yeah.
Are we allowed to dismiss DJ and Benji?
Now they can go. We're 45 minutes. We have a full part one out of this. We can go. Great. Well, they can go. We have some super chats.
Talk to you later.
Later, guys. Later, fellas.